powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Bump, you and I talked about what we, royal we, get wrong when it comes to evaluating quarterback talent. What do you think the Seahawks have gotten wrong at times? And they have hit on picks, but what do you think they've gotten wrong at times when it comes to their own evaluation of talent?
D-line, right? Interior defensive linemen. I think they've been all right on the edge as of late.
I know. And you know what's tough with the Seahawks is, so John Schneider has talked openly about like, well, here's where I think we've missed the mark. And his has always been, I think that we've made our worst picks when we've reached and panicked and drafted out of need before just drafting the best player.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's a good answer. I think that that's definitely been one of the moments. I think there's some other reasons too, though. So let's bring on Ray Roberts, Seahawks pre and post game show host. He joins us now in the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Ray, how's it going?
It's going all right. How you guys doing?
Good. Bump and I are just having a conversation about just talent evaluation in general in the draft. And we were talking about where we think teams sometimes miss. Why do you think teams sometimes just like completely miss the mark? And you can go with what you think Seattle's done or just in general what teams do wrong.
I think sometimes teams will find one little piece of evidence that kind of speaks to what they're looking for, and they don't trust it, or they trust it too much versus what the actual tape shows. So that's why people fall in love with people at the combine. Like, they go there and they just test off the charts, and then you go like, man, like, the production didn't quite look the same on the tape, but man, this is a heck of a guy. He's 300 pounds. He runs a sub 540 and he bench presses, you know, 40 reps or something. How could he not, you know, be a good player in my system? And then you end up missing because you just don't believe what the tape is telling you.
I like that, Ray. There's some guys who are good at taking tests, but don't really know the material. They're just good at taking a test. And there are guys who know the material, but just ain't good at taking the test. You know what I'm saying? But, yeah, I agree with that.
That's the key to why I failed all the damn tests.
That's what it is, man. Yeah, the process is, it's flawed, man. And it'll never be perfect. What makes it hard when I hear some analysis or when guys do miss is that fans expect perfection out of the draft. And it just don't happen that way for the human nature that you talked about. You fall in love with one thing about a person. You say, okay, I'm going to make that work. So that kind of transitions me to people falling in love, or the possibility of the Hawks falling in love with what Jamal can potentially do and not going off of what we saw on film the last few years, even though he's been banged up. You and I were texting the other day just about Jamal and the possibility of him playing linebacker for the Seahawks, and you had an interesting take, man. You want to let the people know?
Yeah, I just think at this point in Jamal's career, first of all, if I was an offensive lineman, and this is no disrespect to Jamal, it's just that if I saw a dude like him in the box playing linebacker, I'm saying, hey, audible to that dude, because I'm all 6 foot six, 300 pounds of me, he's going to have to deal with. You know what I'm saying? I'm just not going to let that dude run around and do what he wants to do. And then the other thing is that, you know, like, the tape, the honest guy don't lie. The guy has been, he's not the same dude that came here, you know, healthy and full of energy and full of playmaking ability and all that kind of stuff. The injuries have grossly slowed him down. And so I think at this point in his career, he's not like a dude that you can just throw out there 80% of the plays. I think you have to have like some kind of gadget type stuff, you know, to kind of get him in places to make plays. And it's just hard to find consistency with gadget plays, you know. And then I think on top of that, that will then create frustration on him, for him and for the team, because you're not maybe getting the production that you'd like to get, and he's probably not getting the production and the playing time that he wants. And so I just think it could create like a firestorm more than it would create like this big productive player that you could have.
Hey, speaking of being a former offensive lineman and speaking of the draft and the Seahawks at pick number 16, I can't help but think that they go with the trenches. Maybe it's Troy Fautanu. You have two tackles. Would you still take a player like him?
If you think that he projects to be like a stud at guard, then yeah. than I think you do. I think, you know, John Snyder said a few days ago, a week or so ago, that he felt like guards were being overvalued or overdrafted. Mm-hmm. And I think the opposite. I think for a long time that the interior of the offensive line has been undervalued and underdrafted. And if you look at how games are being played and offenses have been run and defenses have been run nowadays, man, the middle of your offense and defense has to be rock solid. But, you know, before all the big time players and big paydays came out on the edges, you know, for offensive tackles, for defensive backs that play out in space by themselves and stuff like that. But nowadays, if you look at some of the better defensive tackles, they're getting 7, 8, 9, 10 sacks a season. And so they have dudes that can get after the quarterback, and they have guys that can stuff the run there. And if you look at how the hybrid linebackers are, that double A-gap blitz thing is a thing nowadays. Like, you know, guys are coming right up, blitzing right up the middle, getting to the quarterback. And so if you don't have a strong interior middle of the guts of your defense, of your offense, then I think you're going to struggle. So I think you do have to invest, and maybe it's a really good guard that you might think he's going to be there. He's going to be there the second or third day, but man, he might be there at the bottom of the first day. You might want to just go ahead and get him because they're kind of hard to find.
Yeah, and that's why I like Troy Fautano, because I think he played tackle for UW, but I think he's better off as a guard. I saw the way he moves; it looks great, Ray. And to do some of the things that Grubb is going to ask this offense to do, you got to have guards, tackles, centers who can move, man. Have you seen a change in just the ability of offensive linemen throughout the years, especially with these gap schemes and RPOs?
Yeah, I think so, because I think you have to be like when I was coming in the league, like the left tackle was considered like the most athletic guy. You know, he was, you know, usually not the big 340-pound dude like you would have at the right tackle, because most teams are right-handed. They run to the right, so you want the big run blockers on the right side and the athletic pass blockers on the left side. But now, because of all of the RPOs and all of the movement and the pin and pull and all this other kind of stuff, the post-snap movement, the at-the-snap movement, all this other kind of stuff, you got to have dudes that can move and block on the move. There's one thing to be able to run, but you got to be able to block on the run. And so I think going to these more athletic interior linemen and offensive linemen in general is a good thing. If you look at how, like, the 49ers offense runs, they play a lot of power football, but they play power by changing the angle dynamic or the numbers dynamic by pulling, you know, guys from one side to the other side. And then you have a guy like Trent Williams blowing up the whole, you know, going in motion and stuff. So I do think that the idea that athleticism across the entire offensive line and being able to block and on the run and move and stuff like that has changed over time, where it used to be, you know, you had one guy or something, one guard that pulled a lot, or you had the really athletic left tackle. Now all those dudes, because you can run to either side, have to be able to do that. And because you throw the ball so much, everyone has to be able to pass block.
I wanted to switch and look at the defensive side of things. I think that there are some, and I've kind of been part of this group sometimes, who think that, hey, Mike McDonald was apparently this defensive genius with Michigan and with Baltimore, and, you know, he'll come here and he'll fix so many things. But it's so hard to realistically take that leap when you really struggle with something like a run defense, like this defense does, to being great at it. Like, it takes a couple seasons and it takes time. How realistic do you think at least a decent jump can be for the Seahawks from where they were defensively last year to this season?
Yeah, you know, the other thing about that too, though, is that you have to have some ballers. You know, like at Michigan, they had some ballers, and at Baltimore, they had some ballers. It's not like they just took, like, you know, some run of the mill defensive linemen and defensive players, and then all of a sudden had great defense. So the schemes and stuff is all great, but if you don't have dudes that can do it, it doesn't matter if you're the world's greatest genius on the chalkboard. If you don't have the dudes that can do it on the field with cleats and pads and helmets and all that kind of stuff, it doesn't really matter. And so I think the hesitancy or the the struggle, if you want to call that, is going to be getting the dudes that can take what he draws up on the chalkboard and execute it on the field. And that may take some time and to get the right pieces in here that can do that. And then also get the depth, because a lot of guys don't play the whole season anymore. So you got to have depth, that, you know, dudes that can come in and do that too. So I'm like John Snyder. I don't look at it as, hey, they're going to take this year as a step backwards. I think they want to compete and they want to, you know, they want to get the best players out there, but there's going to be pieces of this offense and defense that are going to be missing because you just had a whole overhaul. And so, it's not enough players available to get all the players that you want and need. And so there's going to be some areas that are going to be slow to develop, and hopefully the fan base will be patient with that. And then hopefully they'll have a plan to fill those gaps.
Ray, Charles Cross is coming into his third year. High expectations for this young man. Take me back to your third year. What are some things that you learned when it comes to yourself, the game, and just how to be a better football player out there? Because I really believe in these two tackles, and Abe Lucas when he's healthy, and Charles Cross. We spent some time talking about the interior line, but talk to me about Charles Cross and what you think he's learned and what to expect from him this year.
Yeah, so my rookie year, you're trying to like adjust, you know, to the league and to what you're seeing and the different types of players and pass rushing. And you get this realization that every single dude is a dude, like even the third string, you know, defensive lineman can come in and give you some problems. And then the second year, it's like the league is adjusting to you. And then the third year, it's like, you got it. Like, you know how to prepare, you know what your strengths and weaknesses are, you know how to study film. You know how to prepare for the different people you're going to play. You've probably seen just about everything there is to see as it relates to like a individual dude's pass rush or how they play the run and all those different kinds of things. Then it's just a matter of you putting in the work so that you can find all the little advantages that you can find, whether it's like a dude's stance or you start – like for me, what really opened up for me is I started going to the meetings with the quarterbacks so I can see how they see the field, because I would just get locked in on like, I'm blocking this dude in the 90 number in front of me 90% of the time. But once I got to see how my block impacts the whole play, it just opened up my eyes to like how better to prepare to make the block. And so I think that's the type of the mental part of the game is part that has to improve, or that's where you make the growth. And for me, Charles, before he got hurt, like, I saw a lot of improvement in him. Like, he wasn't the most dominant run blocker coming out of college. He's more of a finesse dude. But I saw him playing a little bit stronger, more aggressively with his hands, finishing blocks better, running his feet, and then he got hurt. And so then coming back from injury, you're just trying to, like, sustain and be good and not get hurt again. And so hopefully, going into training camp, he feels good, he feels fresh. He has all those things under his belt, and then he can keep improving on the run blocking. And then in the pass blocking, sometimes I think his concentration he lacks just a little bit, because he'll drift too far up the field and then dudes will beat him on the inside. And he's just too athletic, too strong, and too good of a pass blocker to keep allowing that to happen. So hopefully he can lock in on those types of little things that he has complete control over, so that he can have a better success pass block. And, you know, sometimes a dude is just bigger, stronger, faster. They put a great move on you, and you can live with that. But if you're giving up sacks and pressures because of something that you can control, those are the things you want to eliminate.
Former O-lineman, you can hear him on the Seahawks pre- and post-game show. It's Ray Roberts. Thanks, Ray.
Big Ray.
Oh, thanks for having me. Good to hear from you guys again, man. I thought you guys, like, kicked me to the curb or something, you know? Like,
never.
I was like, I haven't heard from my people in a long time. Like, I'm trying to, like, retweet stuff just to kind of let y'all know I'm listening.
See, that's what I do. I follow, unfollow.
It was great to get back on the air.
It was good hearing from you, Ray. We always love to talk to you. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Ray.
You guys have a good one. Peace.
Again, thank you to Ray Roberts. Big Ray joining us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Let's get to four down territory.
This is four down territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver
Michael
Bumpus.
Have you ever shamefully done that? Followed, unfollowed? I did that with like the City of SeaTax account once, because the City of Kent followed Curtis, so then I was mad. So then I followed the city of SeaTac, and then they didn't follow me, so I unfollowed and I followed them again, and I did that like four times, and they still didn't, and I was like, I give
still,
up.
Still didn't do it.
But you know,
don't look desperate, Stacey.
It was very desperate. I was so jealous.
I don't think I've ever done that. If Kobe was around, I'd probably do it every day.
Yeah.
To see if he, you know, catch on.
But then they just don't.
No.
They just don't.
Don't do it.
First down. What team's under the most pressure in the NFC despite recent success?
You got to go to Philly. Nick Sirianni and the Philadelphia Eagles, man. They've won 34 games in the last 3 years. That's the fifth most behind Kansas City, who's got two championships. Dallas, who folds in the playoffs all the time. San Francisco, who's been to a Super Bowl. And the Bills, who just can't get there. They got two new coordinators. You got Kellen Moore, the OC, and Nick Fangio, who pretty much said, look, Desai, you were my mentee, but I'm going to take over this Bears type of defense now. Mm. Last three seasons, they've averaged 26.5 points per game. That's fourth in the NFL. 48% on third downs. That's third in the NFL. They got all pro selections. A.J. Brown in 23 and 22. Lane Johnson in 22. Kelsey in 21 and 22. And Jordan Mailata in 2023. One division championship in 2022. Been to the NFC championship game and the Super Bowl. I mean, you listen or you look at everything I just read to you, this team, you would think, no, they got a few years. They can figure some things out. But you go back to last year and just how they collapsed, it's just a bad look. And this just shows you just how fragile relationships are in the NFL. Remember when Nick Sirianni could do no wrong? Mm-hmm. He's the Italian on the sideline with all this passion in Philadelphia, and everybody loves you. But as soon as you show signs of slowing down, they want to flip on you. But what did the Eagles do this offseason? They got better. Devin White at linebacker. They add Bryce Huff at the edge spot. Saquon Barkley at the RB spot. And then C.J. Gardner-Johnson is back with his second stint with Philadelphia. They didn't stay still and say, okay, we're just going to run it back and try to get better that way. They changed the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, brought in some ballers. If they do not contend for a division championship, you got to throw the Dallas Cowboys in there because their roster is going to be good. Contend for a division and get at least one or two wins in the playoffs. Nick Sirianni is going to be in the hot seat, and he has coached one of the best teams in the NFL the last 3 years. Relationships are fragile in the NFL when you're not winning despite the talent that you have. Well, even if you do win, but you don't win in a certain fashion and kind of put teams away. It's embarrassing watching what Baker Mayfield did to them in the playoffs. Baker, you go ahead and do your thing, though. Got a $100 million contract out the deal. So, yeah, look at the Philadelphia Eagles. They got some things to do.
Second down. The preseason's a time for coaches to evaluate their teams and construct their rosters, but what else should it be used for?
Now, if you listen to Get Off My Lawn, you heard me just go on a rant.
It was great.
And I appreciate that. And I talked about just the rule changes and how guys need to suck it up, buttercup, and go ahead and do your job. Just get better at tackling. But to help those guys out, to help these defenders out, the NFL should try these new rule changes during the preseason. Say in 2024, you try all these rule changes, and then in 25, you implement the ones that you feel like worked and that the referees could handle. If not, you're going in this whole thing blind, and you're saying, let's just see if it works, which I'm okay with, but I always try to appease everybody. How can we meet in the middle and find common ground so everyone's not throwing their hands up saying these referees are going to get it wrong? Let me warn you, referees will blow some of these calls. That's just how it is. Human nature happens all the time. But use the preseason. Experiment during the preseason and see if this stuff works. If it doesn't work, then you move on. If it feels good, then you keep it rolling. So, NFL, hope you're listening. Do what I tell you to do. Use the preseason.
Third down. Who will become one of the NFL's most dangerous players with the new kickoff rules?
I'm so glad that they are experimenting with this kickoff rule. I watched it during the XFL, and it just allows for big plays to happen without the violent impacts. But guys like Cordell Patterson, the great returner that we've known for the Minnesota Vikings, the Atlanta Falcons, and now he's with the Steelers, he's back in play. He's got 13,000 all-purpose yards. He has three seasons with 1,000-plus yards in return yards. He's a four-time Pro Bowl. He has 9 kick returns, 4 touchdowns. This guy just became that much more valuable. He is now with the Steelers. We talked about how great of an offseason these guys have had with getting Patrick Queen, Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, Mike Williams. You throw Patterson into the mix. This is going to influence, I think, some draft picks later on in the draft. If you have a guy like Patterson who is versatile, who can return kicks, be a receiver, and be a running back, I think this just adds value to their game. Even a guy like my dude, D. Estridge, all right? He's got more value now.
Okay.
To stay healthy, D, I love you, man. Let's get it done.
Fourth down. I'm going to be eating my words, eating crow, when D. Eskridge is like a pro, like a special teams pro bowler, and I'm sitting here like, I always thought D could do this.
I always knew
Bump had his doubts, but I always said, D. Eskridge, you are the man. I know that you can do this. You have it in you. One of the hype trains we didn't get to yesterday was D. Eskridge will have more special teams touchdowns than receiving touchdowns.
Yeah. I see it. He almost took one to the hood last year.
It's in there.
It's in there. He's got to stay healthy.
Fourth down. What quarterback's in a fragile moment in his career but still has a lot left in the tank?
It's weird, man. My man is only, 26 years old, maybe about to be 27. He's a two-time Pro Bowler in 20 and 21. I'm talking about Kyler Murray. He's in a weird place in his career because he's had years where you see the potential and the greatness in this young man. But then he gets banged up. There's some leadership issues going on. Then you throw the contract in there when they're talking about, look, you can't play video games. And then you got Gannon, who is a second-year head coach. And at some point, if you're not able to connect with your quarterback and get him to play the way you want to, no matter how talented he is, sometimes you say, maybe it's just not a good fit. But they have the number 4 pick in the draft this year. They better go ahead and get Marvin Harrison and give this dude some opportunity. I believe James Conner's still over there at the running back spot, good running back. You draft a tight end in McBride, I believe his name is, a young man out of Colorado State a couple years ago. You have to keep surrounding him with some pieces to be successful. But at some point, you're going to look at the contract, you're going to look at the production, and if it doesn't add up, you're going to try to move on. The only problem is who's going to pick up that contract, because you made him one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the game. When he did sign that contract, he was the highest paid quarterback in the game. I look at Kyler Murray coming off a knee injury and say, you battled back last year. You didn't have to come back last year. You play in 8 games and you show that you're competitive. You might be turning a corner. But once you reach around year 5, 6, 7 as a quarterback, if they're not getting the production they want out of you, then you're going to experiment with other options. And Kyler Murray came in and got this job after Josh Rosen was the number 1 pick. And why did Kyler Murray get the job? Because Cliff Kingsbury wanted his guy at the spot. So I'm watching Kyler. It's going to be tough this year. The division's going to be tough. I believe the Hawks are going to be better. The Niners are going to be good. The Rams are going to be better. It's going to be tough for him. So even if the team doesn't have the success that we'd like, if he individually shows promise, he should be okay. Mm-hmm. But he has to ball this year. No excuses.
Now, if we were to extend that and take a look around the rest of the league, you don't have to answer the second part about, like, but I think he can still turn this around. I think he's got a lot left. Let's just look at maybe like a hot seat of quarterbacks. Is there another quarterback around the league where you go, he's in kind of a fragile, weird place as a quarterback, and I am wondering what's going to happen here? Because, God, this is such a weird answer, but like, Jimmy G's going to be a backup with the Rams, so he doesn't have to worry about it. Kirk Cousins is going to have time.
Wilson.
Oh, God, the most
Russell
obvious
Wilson.
One in front of me the whole time.
Russell got a ball this year, bro. You don't ball this year, it's going to be a little suspect over here. Daniel Jones has the ball this year. You got Drew Lock. They also have, the fifth pick? Fifth or sixth pick
in
the
draft. And they might draft one.
Might get a quarterback there. Sam Darnold over there with the Minnesota Vikings. You're on a one-year deal for $10 million. They have the 11th and the 23rd pick in the first round. They might move up to get a quarterback. Marcus Mariota, this is his last shot with the Commanders.
425 said Derek Carr.
Derek Carr? Yeah, I'm with that. Every year there's about 6 to 7 quarterbacks who you're questioning and saying, if you don't get it done this year, you might be gone. That's why, like Troy Wingle says, teams reach in the draft for the quarterback because it's tough to find a good one.
The Russell Wilson answer was staring me in the face, and I was trying to get too creative. I was just trying to think outside the box of, like, who's in a fragile state? Oh, maybe the guy who needs to, like, save part of his legacy.
Right.
Because he just became a different quarterback. Not completely different. There were a lot of things that were always there in Seattle, but, like, that fall off was real. The drop off was real. It's not like he was always horrible in Seattle and then just became bad in Denver.
Man.
It was.
I hope he's seeing, like, a therapist, sports psychologist.
I don't know. He seems like someone who has truly believed, and I don't know, this is from looking in on the outside, the whole time that the problems were not his.
Yeah.
That it's like, I don't have the pieces I need. Like, yeah, I'll be accountable to myself, but, like, I wasn't in a good position in Denver. I don't know.
Hey, look in the mirror, brother.
All right, we're going to stick with the draft at 1:30, talking about why I'm more confused than ever about what the Hawks will do at number 16, and then a characteristic we want the Hawks to fall in love with whoever they choose. And then coming up at 1:45, wrapping up the show with what I need to know, but you can get your questions in now. So text any question you have to the Mac and Jack's text line, 866-979-3776. All of that coming your way next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
What I need to know is coming your way in 15 minutes. Get your questions, any question, into the Mac and Jack's text line. That number is 866-979-3776. Any question, text it now. We'll get to it in 15 before we do. I had questions of my own, Bump, for Ray Roberts, primarily about what the Seahawks might do at pick number 16. And I said, God, I keep seeing Troy Fautanu, but obviously they have two starting tackles with Abe Lucas and a former number 9 overall pick, Charles Cross. Is Troy a reach? Is he the right pick? Is he whatever? And Ray said, look, if you're someone who thinks that he has the flexibility to be a stud guard, mm-hmm. then he's not a reach.
Mm-hmm.
But because I don't know if he has that flexibility, Bump, I'm now more confused than ever.
I do.
You do?
I do know, and
okay,
he does.
Okay, tell me more.
Definitely does. You watch film on this dude. Think Rub did. He did a lot of GT pulls, guard tackle pulls. So, Troy would start on the left side. Bam, he's pulling. He's doing the kick out on the defensive end. He's climbing up to the second level. And you just watch his feet. Stacey, you don't have to know nothing about offensive line play. You watch him move and his feet. It's almost weird seeing a big man sound like, you know, when you like, watch cartoons and you hear that da-da-da-da-da-da when they're moving their feet quickly.
I thought you were going to say basketball.
That's what I see when I see Troy, man. He's agile. He definitely was a running back at some point of his Pop Warner career. They gave him a rock and said, just go.
Troy, go for it.
Troy, do your thing. I think he projects well at the guard spot on the next level. You don't need a tackle, but if you do pick him up, I think he transitioned real smoothly into the guard spot.
Are you just as confused as me about what happens at 16? I feel like it used to make sense. I thought, oh, trenches. But now I don't know.
Well, no one really knows, right? I think we know what we would want.
Yeah.
But you still have to wait for everything in front of you to happen. You don't know. We think we know what number 1, number 2, number 3, number 4 are going to do, right? Quarterback, receiver. Then after that, I think it gets interesting. You got the Chargers, and then you have the Giants, and I think it's like the Falcons or something like that. You kind of got to wait and see what happens in front of you. But I look at the teams that are in front of the Seahawks, and I see a pathway to where Troy is sitting there at 16, and you go ahead and grab him. The draft is unpredictable. Things are going to change quickly. But if Troy's available, if Brock Bowers is available, that is the perfect case scenario for me, and I'm grabbing one of those dudes.
I'll also throw in that while I hope Abe Lucas is going to be just fine, and John Schneider at the annual meetings told Brady Henderson of ESPN that they're expecting Abe to be ready in week one, I still have a little bit of nerves about whether that's a chronic knee injury, whether that's going to be something that keeps him sidelined. We saw a completely banged up offensive line at one point, every starter missing some time.
Yeah.
I'm okay having another stud tackle. Like, he might be a stud guard at the NFL level, but I am very okay with having extras at a position where the Seahawks have really struggled to find talent.
We call that a good old 2-for-1, Stace. If Troy gets drafted and Abe is banged up, you know that he can play the tackle position. He's a bit undersized in the NFL when it comes to the tackle spot, but he can get it done. I saw Abe maybe a month ago, asked him about the knee. He seemed pretty confident that it's going to be okay. But you're right. You never really know with those things, man. Once a knee gets banged up, a hamstring, it can become chronic. And it can be something that you deal with your whole career. But the fact that Abe has had so much time off makes me feel like he's going to be all right. He's had time off, and he doesn't look like he's a guy who gained a lot of weight and let himself go. He looked like he was ready to play some ball. So I believe that that Abe is going to be okay in that situation. But you're right. If you do draft Troy, you got a guy who can be a tackle. It's just who's going to play guard then. You still got Phil Haynes.
Isn't Phil Haynes?
Oh, Phil might be gone.
I think he's an option. I don't know that he signed somewhere. So
see.
Evan ended up signing. Damien obviously signed.
Evan with the Cardinals.
I don't know. I don't remember about Phil.
We got Anthony Bradford.
Yeah.
And there is no left guard on the roster right now.
And you need one of those because you need
five.
You need five.
You
need minimum five.
Minimum.
The second half of this segment, I wanted to kind of break our own rules. So not the show rules. We were talking with Ray about mistakes teams make in the draft. We talked with Trey Wingo about mistakes teams make in the draft. And both of them, but particularly Ray, said sometimes teams just fall in love with one thing and then they ignore other stuff. Like I remember reading about a highly drafted quarterback who a team fell in love with because, like, after a workout, and he had all the intangibles, like, you know, physical specimen, but said something like, hey, you guys want to get breakfast? And they were like, oh, character. Old school guy, which, like, not wrong at all. No. Incredibly, incredibly likable. But did they fall in love with that and ignore accuracy issues or whatever? So I know we're supposed to take this well-rounded approach, but I kind of wanted to do the opposite. Mm-hmm. I wanted to break the rule that we talked about. I wanted to do the exact thing Ray said teams do too much. A characteristic you want the Hawks to fall in love with whoever they pick first. Like, take it off the field, or you can do type of player, but kind of in an abstract way. Yeah, you don't want them to ignore red flags, but what's something you really hope the Hawks fall in love with someone because you want to see that on this team?
I'll put myself in the GM spot.
Okay.
And let's say we have a couple of guys, measurements are the same. They play the same position. Now we're nitpicking, trying to figure out, is he going to be a right fit? There's something that I will judge a man off of every single time. How you shake my hand. If you got a limp wrist and you do not look me in the eye, I am like, I just can't do it. And that's just me. And that doesn't mean that guy's going to turn out and not be a good worker or not be a good teammate. There's just little things that I look for. I go, all right, another thing I'll look for. I'll ask the guy. Now I'm getting weird with these,
just do
this
it.
Stuff, right? Now I'll be like, all right, if you're walking down the street with your lady, okay,
what side
of the street are you standing on? If she's on the street side and you're on the safe side, I'm like, I don't know if I can rock with this dude, man. It's just little things like that, you know?
That's funny.
Yeah, that's because those are the little things that you look for, I think, when it comes to personality.
Yeah.
And is that the type of guy you want? You know the football player, at least you think you do. But outside of that, what kind of dude is he?
Again, the rule Ray said is, like, you don't want to fall in love with one thing. But if you could choose one thing that this guy had, what might sway your mind? Christian, the 206, said edgy and aggression. Let me tell you what. Mm-hmm. I hear Brock talk about it all the time, that violence. Just having been missing from this team for a while. It's not to say that there aren't guys on this team that are tough, that are violent, that are aggressive. But you don't see it play out in terms of how the vibe of the defense is.
I want a guy who is edgy and aggressive on the field, but composed off the field. I love a guy who can flip a switch. Like, because you can't be walking around crazy all the time. You ain't going to make it in society very far, right? You got to be able to flip the switch. When it's time to be crazy, you crazy. When it's time to be composed and articulate, you can do that as well. Don't necessarily have to be articulate. Everybody doesn't feel comfortable speaking to people and all that. I'm fine with that. But being able to adapt your demeanor to what is necessary on a, you know, on a 31, can you get grimy and gritty? On a long drive, can you compose yourself? On a stretch during the season where your team is just getting beat up, can you stay positive? It's just regulating your emotions. Because the guys who go crazy, you know, throwing helmets and all that stuff, I'm like, man, there's a time and a place for that. Now ain't it. You just got us a 15-yard penalty. Calm yourself down.
Can I sound very old man, get off my lawn for a minute?
Please
like
do.
Very old school. I don't love... In an ideal world, there would be a guy who's just been a stand-up dude. And, like, there have been many guys where I thought, man, I wish this guy would succeed because he's such a good guy. Like, I remember interviewing L.J. Collier and thinking in his first year and thinking, what a nice kid. You know what I mean? Like, interviewing Ryan Neal, thinking, what a great guy. Neither of them became full-time starters for the Seahawks. But, like, so there's certainly times when character just isn't enough. But I'm also thinking back to some other draft picks the Seahawks have made where there were some red flags, maybe like a run-in with the law, maybe a run-in with an issue, a disciplinary issue, questions about their motor. And sometimes none of that matters because you are a teenager and you get over it.
Yep.
Other times it does.
Yeah.
And so there are people who have had amazing Seahawks careers and turned into great young men here. Bruce Irvin. Who had, you know, issues or whatever when they were younger. Then there are guys who didn't.
Guys who can publicly or not publicly, but in that scenario with the GM or coach, talk about their mistakes and how they've learned from it. The guys who run from it and get all awkward about it.
Defensive.
That's a red flag. Being like, you really didn't learn anything, have you? So, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I was feeling very, like, old school, like, well, no run-ins with the law. But I know it's, I don't know, it's something that, I've seen examples of it and then it not work out that you're like, how about just a guy who just hangs out with friends. You know, you're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Get your questions in for What I Need to Know, 866-979-3776. Coming up next.
Bump and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
It's What I Need to Know. We answer your burning questions. Last segment here. Get those questions into the Mac and Jack's text line, 866-979-3776. It doesn't have to be about sports, though our first one is. What I Need to Know, what sport, and you can choose any league, MLB, NBA, NFL, NHL, has the best team name and the worst team name?
Ooh-wee, the best.
So can I just say I interpreted this wrong the first time? Mm-hmm. I think this listener is saying what league has the best and worst team names. So we can answer like that version.
General.
In general, like NHL has the worst team names kind of thing. I interpreted it initially as what's the best team name and the worst team name across all leagues.
That's what I thought.
So we could go either.
NHL has the worst names.
I agree.
Canadians, the Senators, the Lightning, the Maple Leafs, the Wild.
There's just
You have a team called the Canadians, and then you've got a team called the Canucks. Canucks is a slang for Canadians.
Yeah, get out of here.
Yeah, it's the NHL. It has the worst names.
I'm going to say it. I didn't love the Kraken.
It's grown on me.
I like the Kraken.
Initially, I didn't like it.
What I'm saying. I didn't like it. It has grown on me. I agree. I initially was like, really? I guess.
Yeah.
2x3, OKC, their team name is pretty god-awful. And that's not just, like, us being a hater about OKC, but you could have done so much better. Yeah.
I mean, but the NBA, their teams, I mean, their names are just relevant. The Knicks, if you don't know what the Knicks are, I mean, that one can confuse you a bit, I guess. But I feel like the NFL has the best names.
I interpreted initially, so because I agree with you, I went best and worst for team names across all leagues. Best? I'm sorry. I like the Chicago Bears because I like the idea of saying the Bears.
The Bears.
Mm-hmm. I also like their uniforms. I've always secretly been envious of the Bears situation, minus what happens on the field. Worst? Look.
Commanders is bad, though.
Controversial take. I don't like Cleveland Guardians.
No, I don't like that either.
Guardians and Commanders feel like XFL team names, and I don't like them.
I think one of the best names, Houston Texans. Like, straight to the point, dog.
Yeah. Yeah. And Texas Rangers, they were like, look, you know what we do here. You know what we're about.
You know how we get down?
Yeah. You could say that about Houston Astros, but not as cool. Houston Texans is this is where it's at. It's also cool. It sounds like Houston, Texas, baby.
Yep.
Shout out Beyonce. What I need to know, if your bracket is perfect, first of all, whoa. If your bracket was perfect after going into Final Four weekend, would you be braggy about it or a ball of nerves?
Nah, I'd humble brag.
I'm telling everyone.
I'd be like, oh, I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right.
I would start the show every day.
Got all sweet 16.
Yeah.
You know, all right.
Just, start the show being like, I forgot. You have missed a couple. You've missed a couple. Okay, you didn't see Oakland over Kentucky. That's so weird. To me, it was so obvious. You know, but that's funny
when
how people
really
think.
Look at the rosters and the matchups.
That's funny how people think differently because I saw Kentucky exiting. That's so wild how you didn't.
Hey, somebody about the name. Somebody says Los Angeles Lakers. What the F? I get you. If you don't know the history of the Lakers,
because they moved,
it
right?
makes sense. Relocated, they were in Minnesota, so that's why they're the Lakers.
Bump. What was the worst injury you had?
Man, probably it broke my collarbone when I was in eighth grade. It was I didn't play football until ninth grade. So I broke my collarbone in eighth grade and I was so scared to hit. I'm like, I'm going to break it. It's going to pop again. But it grew back pretty thick, pretty strong, but collarbone and then, broke a bone in my foot, got a screw in it
now. I ripped a nail off my finger and for a long time I was afraid.
Nah, you dislocated your elbow.
I did dislocate my elbow, but you know what? That did not hurt in the moment. And I thought I broke my arm because the bone kind of popped to the side and you could hear it click. Like you could hear it get dislocated. And then I popped it back in myself on accident. They needed me to flatten it for an x-ray. And they were like, okay, and keep pushing down. And then they kind of reached out and it popped back in.
Wow.
And it didn't hurt until the next day.
Gangsta.
The next day was god awful. let's see what I need to know. Bagel with cream cheese or English muffin with butter or jam? Oh, this is easy.
Ooh, is it easy?
Yes, it's easy.
What is it?
It's obviously a bagel with cream cheese, and I would take a scone with butter or jam over an English muffin.
That English muffin with the butter?
Ooh. So you're going English muffin and butter over.
Yeah.
There's so many cream cheeses you can put on.
There's so many flavors. There's only one flavor of butter.
It's the best.
It's butter flavor.
It's butter flavor. It is the best flavor. To be fair, it is the best flavor. Would you rather have rain on a warm day or clear day, but it's cold?
Now, how cold are we talking, though?
Let's go.
30 degrees.
That's freezing.
40
that's
degrees.
Below. Let's go 40. 40 degrees. It's
I take
brisk.
Clear and cold.
Very
clear
brisk.
And cold.
I take clear and cold. Rain on a warm day, so a shower. What's the
I just
point?
Don't like rain
any
at
day.
Any, day.
Any
yeah.
day. I would rather have it be clear and cold. I'll bundle up. That's fine. Rain on a warm day doesn't make any sense.
I can play golf when it's cold and clear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rain just. I would take a warm day over a cold day 10 times out of 10. Literally no one's choosing rain unless you're inside and you don't want to do anything and it gives you an excuse, like how COVID used to be. You know, you used to be like, oh, I'm so sorry, man. It's, you know, I can't go out. And now you can't do that anymore. Let's see what I need to know. Ba-da-da-da. What would you say the Seahawks interior offensive line would be like if they signed Laken Tomlinson?
It'd be good.
I mean, depth. Yeah. Has he signed anywhere yet?
No, still free agent.
From the 206, it's another food choice. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Wings, delicious,
mm-hmm.
or ribs?
If the meat is falling off the bone, I'm going ribs, but ain't nothing like some good wings. Wings that are overrated, Wingstop. Overrated. Just side note. Wingstop wings are overrated.
What I need to know, what will be the score for our season opener tomorrow?
5-3. Good guys.
Okay. Curtis, you want to chime in with one?
I'll go 6-4 Mariners.
I will go Castillo on the mound. I'll keep it low. You know what? It's going to be quiet. It's going to be boring. I'm going to go 2-1 Mariners.
Typical. Wow.
But
typical
it'll be
Mariner
great
score.
Because it's opening day and we're going to have a ton of fun. We are so excited. We will be live at T-Mobile Park tomorrow and we're going to have some really fun guests for you guys. We can't wait to get this thing started. You're just over 24 hours away from first pitch. Opening day tomorrow. We're going to be there. Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming up next.